Hey guys, Carlos here. I know this isn't how we usually start the show, but I wanted to make two real quick announcements. First and foremost, thank you. Thank you so much for listening and sharing and messaging and sending us your ideas and your encounters and the excitement for the show. It's absolutely amazing. The support for the Dungeon Rats has been unbelievable and more than we could have ever hoped for. So if you're listening to this right now on your commute or while you're cleaning your apartment or maybe while you're prepping for your next session with your own rats, just know that this show would not exist without you. So thank you from all of us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that brings me to my second announcement, which is a thank you announcement is not enough. Patrick and I, we've been talking about a more substantial thank you for our listeners, and I think we have one. Okay, are you ready for this? Free stuff. That's it. Just free stuff. If you've been following us on Instagram or Twitter, you might have seen some of the photos that we've taken, but we had stickers and buttons made for the show. Now, the original idea was to put them out on a website and sell them, but screw that. We're done with that. Instead, we're just opting to give them all away to all our early listeners who took a chance on us and actively liked the show and participated with us. So how about this? If you like the show and think more people should listen to it, you write a short review on iTunes, then send us a message of which review is yours, along with your name and shipping info to thedungeonrats@gmail.com, and we'll mail out some free stuff to you. How does that sound? I honestly have no idea how many people will actually do this, but I'm going to keep sending this stuff out until our supply is gone. So if you want some, hit me up, because once they're gone, they're gone. Once we run out, I'm going to make an announcement on the following episode, okay? So don't worry about that. If I haven't announced that we ran out, that means we still got them in stock, okay? Anyways, that's it. That's all I want to say. That, and thank you, and we love you guys, and I can't wait to listen to this Troon episode.
The Dungeon Rats murdered the entire royal family of Naporia and have been punished to a fate worse than death. For they are forever trapped in the endless dungeon. And it's your job to keep them there and make them suffer through your most wicked creations.
Hello, and well met, brave guardians. I am Troon of the West, lately of the Endless Dungeon. I have commandeered the portal to report back to you all that I have learned, and to provide backstory, the second finest kind of story. As you know, I recently met the adventurers known as the Dungeon Rats. They believed I was there under normal, that is, criminal circumstances, but not so. I ventured there under my own power to seek out a mysterious artifact and a most intriguing mystery. The Court of Crowns has treated me kindly and allowed me free passage in and out of the dungeon. When last I was there, I discovered that the once powerful wizard Crimbalm had been turned into an evil undead lich. This was unexpected. How could Crimbalm have been turned? Where did this dark magic come from? We have not had a lich in Naporia since the 500-year war with Udala. Of course, you know of the Great War, Guardian. If you are not as ignorant of your own history as a baby who is also stupid. Oh, before the war, chaos engulfed our great nation. Our ancestors were ruled by Udala, the Demon Queen. Udala did not care for us, for all she ever wanted was to amass more power and to be heralded as a deity. When she first arrived, she drained the land of life and sucked the light from the sun. The nights grew longer and longer as she ruled in her cruelty. For many generations, the people of Naporia did not feel the warm embrace of morning. Trees could not grow. Wildlife became scarce. People began to starve and were desperate. So desperate that to survive, some began to feed on one another. Those who fed changed. They became wicked, and what was once guilt became horrible joy. They were happy to be ruled over by the Demon Queen. They worshipped her. They prayed to her. And they acted on her desires. And in return, she provided them with gifts. It is hard to know how many, but some of these relics still remain in the kingdom, while others have disappeared. The first gift from Udala was given to a man with the strength of an ox, one who had been feeding on the flesh of his fellow man since birth, Francis Corwin. His love for Udala consumed him. Now, at this time, there were many followers of Udala, but they lacked organization. Francis Corwin changed that. Traveling from town to town, he recruited on behalf of Udala, collecting those who fed and harvesting those who did not. The bards sing of a monk, Sten Minori, whose monastery was besieged by Corwin's awful horde. He cried out, quote, "We will die before we let Corwin take us! His army is too covered in shadows to be saved, but that does not mean that we cannot save ourselves! When he arrived in town, his men fed on the children first, claiming their soft skin made them the perfect appetizer. There was glee in their eyes as they pulled the women into cages, treating them like beasts to provide food during the harvest." We do not know for certain what happened to Stem Minori, but we do know that Corwin's army grew to be the most powerful in the kingdom. They took the old capital, where they built a great shrine to Udala. Those who fed would gather around the shrine and sacrifice their loved ones in Udala's name, and they would feast through the endless night. Often, during the high holidays, Corwin himself would appear and speak to his people. On one such occasion, he wore a large emerald amulet, one that shimmered with magic. He told the crowd that Udala had showed herself to him in a dream. She told him that she was proud of him, but that he was not finished yet. He could not complete his work in his brief mortal life, so as long as he wore this amulet around his neck, he would not age a single day. However, were the amulet ever removed, he would age and die. By all accounts, Corwin obeyed this command and never removed his amulet. Even after the rise of Lathander many years later, Corwin was still leading Udala's army. As time progressed, he became increasingly paranoid, constantly worried that one of his enemies, or even worse, family, would steal the amulet from him when he least expected it. Eventually, he built the Tower of Cronus, now owned by the Katamir family. It is a magical tower that grows taller and taller as the night goes on, and does not return to its normal height until its owner awakes and declares that it be safe. Due to Corwin's paranoia, the conquests, thankfully, stopped. On the outlands of Udala's empire, those who were strong enough began to form small factions. Each faction has their story, but one thing is constant. They learned how to use Udala's curse against her, and to bend the shadows to create the light that they needed to survive. Excuse me. My mouth has become dry.
Camille, could you grab me a chalice of water, please? Thank you, dear.
After the 12 territories banded together, the 500-year war began. For 500 years, light fought darkness, and in the depths of... but, of course, you know this. I mean, if you don't know the details of the war, then you're not from Naporia. Okay. All right, well, never mind. Let's skip forward. The events of the 500-year war are not important to my point, which, trust me, I am getting to. Thank you for your patience, Guardians. And thank you, Camille. Oh, yeah. That's crisp. Camille, you're the best. And you're a great nanny, too, I bet. All right, see you later. When the 12 territories of Naporia were finally able to march on the old capital, they fought Corwin himself. He had become so strong and powerful that he was single-handedly clearing entire brigades without receiving a scratch. Udala herself was said to have appeared in the sky to watch him destroy the followers of Lathander. But there was one who could stop him. a young dwarf named Greta. While she was certainly strong and stout, it wasn't her strength, a mere 15, that set her apart. No, it was her constitution, the rank of which is unrecorded. She feared nothing. After she witnessed her entire family's capture at the hands of those who fed, something changed within her. She became solely focused on freeing Naporia from the shadows. She had been through many battles and suffered many scars, but she never stopped marching forward. She arrived at the old capital, and she found herself face to face with Corwin himself. As he stood there, staring at her with eyes that have witnessed countless murders, he did not run. An older, and perhaps wiser, soldier might have, but not Greta. She stood her ground. She waited for him to approach her, and when he swung his sword, as he had done 1,000 times before, she did not flinch. Instead, she reached forward and yanked the amulet off its chain. With his swipe, he cleanly removed her head, but her hand still held the gift of Udala. He began to age, and in a bellow that sounded like the seven hells leaving his lungs, he screamed and collapsed to the ground. As he did so, a highly decorated fighter named Brandel thrust a javelin through his heart. Corwin bled to death and made his final statement. Quote, "I have failed you, Udala, but they will keep you safe." We do not know what was meant by this. We don't know who they are. For after the fall of the old capital, the momentum had shifted in favor of the light. Brandel took the amulet with him, for he knew that it held great power, and although he never put it on, what he did marked a tradition that would be upheld for many generations. He gave it to his wife, Nia. Brandel grew old and died, you know, like a normal person, but his wife stayed as young as the day she was given the amulet. The governors of Naporia knew she wore the amulet of Corwin, and that it was likely the reason for her ageless appearance, but it did not create any fear, for the people of Naporia had been manipulating Udala's tainted magic for at least 1,000 years. It was not long after the fall of Corwin that Udala began to grow weak. The armies of the Light pushed her back into what is now known as the Endless Dungeon, where she died at the hands of the Paladin Gru. After he defeated Udala, Paladin Gru told the newly freed peoples that he was not alone in the dungeon. She had flooded the place with creatures who became visions of his past, of his greatest fears, of his wrongdoings. They shifted and changed as he got closer and closer to the weak Udala. The dungeon itself appeared to bend to the demon mistress's whims. His soul was lost in the darkness. But suddenly, the light of Lathander appeared. It emanated through the caverns of the dungeon. His surroundings warped and twisted, and suddenly, he was standing alone in a room, eye to eye, with a decaying old woman. Without speaking a word, he swung his warhammer, and the deed was done. With Udala defeated, a time of peace began. Peace is never easy. It was first threatened when the 12 territories could not agree on how the new lands would be divided. And in turn, they decided a king was needed to settle matters of dispute. But this king could not be from one of the ruling families, so they turned to the wisest person in the kingdom, Nia, the widow of Brandel. By this time, Nia had remarried, and her husband was the son of the Paladin Gru. Griff was a simple man, honorable, and wanted nothing more than peace for the people of Naporia. One leader from each of the territories would take a seat at the Court of Crowns, and King Griff would settle any disputes which happened within the court. As King Griff and Nia settled into the new capital, she bore a beautiful daughter named Eloisa. Much like before, King Griff aged as a normal human, but once Eloisa reached the age of maturity, her aging began to slow. It did not stop altogether, but it was clear that being born of the queen who wore the amulet of Corwin had given her special and unexpected powers. As King Griff neared death, Queen Nia became very sad. She told her people that she could not go through the death of another person she loved, and would give the amulet to her daughter on the king's final day. And when she did this, a new tradition began. After two lifetimes, the queen would remove the amulet and pass it on to her next of kin. There were side effects to wearing the amulet, or perhaps it was only fate. Each queen bore only one child, always a daughter. Throughout most of Naporia's history, the princess would pick their king, and after being queen for a lifetime, they would select a second king and have a child. It was always this way, for nearly 2,000 years. But recently, Queen Bella ended the tradition when she selected a third king to take the throne, which must have upset Princess Malia deeply. Now we are caught up to recent history. From what I have been able to put together, Princess Malia hired the woefully ignorant gang, known throughout the kingdom as the Dungeon Rats, to take the Amulet of Corwin from Queen Bella. Clearly, she wanted her rightful seat at the throne, and the Dungeon Rats just went ahead and did it, as though they didn't know all of this stuff I just said, which any schoolchild from Naporia should have known, but what can you do? Shockingly, this band of misfits actually accomplished the feat, effectively murdering Queen Bella. But, and these details are still unclear, somehow Princess Malia and the sitting king were also killed, leaving no one to mediate the dealings of the Court of Crowns. Now, even the outlands of the kingdom, my home, are suffering. There is not enough food. Starvation is everywhere. There are only four families left in the court, which has made many of the local magistrates easily corruptible. And things are not looking good for the Katimer family, which was once held in high regard. But ever since the trial of Dragaleb, they hold no power and have no influence in the kingdom. The details of Dragaleb's case remain contested, but one thing is certain. After the death of the royal family, they lost practically everything to the Lickalies. I suspect the Court of Crowns will consist of only three families soon. Well, perhaps change is good. We have been under the same systems for 2,000 years, but alas, we have also had peace for this entire time, and that is something we should respect. As if somehow Eudala was to amass power again, she might be able to return to this plane. For demon lords do not die. They only lie in wait. And so, what was once a simple treasure hunt has become something far more urgent. For now that I know Crimbalm is a lich, I fear someone is using the disorganization of the kingdom to take power away from the light and return it to the shadows. And if that dark power were to ever find what I seek, we could be forever lost. For the Amulet of Corwin, the first gift of Eudala, the secret to everlasting life, is missing. And no one knows where it went.
Fearless leader of the Dungeon Rats. Thanks for listening to our history lesson. Pat is a big fan of Dan Carlin's hardcore history, so he did his best to rip that off. Don't forget, send a screenshot of your reviews with your name and mailing address to thedungeonrats@gmail.com, and the rats will send you some buttons and stickers. Anyway, The Dungeon Rats is produced by Patrick O'Rourke and Carlos Luna. This episode was written and edited by Patrick O'Rourke. Troon of the West is played by Austin Campion. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @AnAustinCampion. Also, if you like his comedy, check out his showtimes at whatisph.com. Well, I think that's it for Rot, the master of the metagame. And remember, a true leader always gets the last word.